running here and I'm running there and I'm trying to accomplish this and accomplish this. And yet there's something about the peace of God that says, would you just stop it? Like, I didn't make you for that. And we miss out on places that we can serve and that we can invest and speak wisdom into. And so in this idea of anxiety, it's odd because we struggle with anxiety and yet God has wired anxiety into us. For any of you guys that just several months ago, my mom and dad were on their way to Cincinnati to visit Meredith and I and the girls. And as they're going through Lexington, they are running 65 miles an hour, and they hit standing water in the interstate, and their car begins to hydroplane, and they do a 180, and they kiss the barrier, and they're sitting in the emergency lane facing oncoming traffic. And they're fine. But my mom calls, and I can hear in her voice, something's going wrong. Now, God wired into her anxiety. That when something challenges your safety and your security, that your brain picks up and says, uh-oh, you're in trouble. Let's rewire how you operate. Let's increase your breathing. Let's increase your heart rate. Let's move blood away from your gut into your feet, into your hands, because you're in danger. Perfectly normal. God wired us to live this way. Yet when that becomes the dominant theme in our life, not as an impulse to help us work through things, but it becomes the very thing that paralyzes us, then we have a problem. And as we talk about safety and security, I really believe that we've created a myth that there is really anything in our life that is safe and that there's really anything in our life that is secure. Just a few weeks ago, Doug Price and I were at Topgolf with Walt Sawchuk. Sitting there having a Diet Coke one afternoon in the pouring down rain, playing golf and talking trash. We're talking about our marriages. We're talking about our kids. I sit there and listen to Walt talk about his two kids and them growing up and what that was like and the challenges. 53 years old, talking about his adult league baseball and an incredible athlete. And yet this week we're reminded that there is no such thing as safety and security. This week, as a church, as we process the loss of baby Bodie Campbell, right, we're reminded there's no such thing as safety and security. And yet we spend a life pursuing it. Right? We live in a world that our kids actually wear helmets when they ride their bikes. Right? If you're over 40, like, we didn't own helmets. Right, but now you got knee pads and elbow pads, right? Because we love safety. You drive a Volvo because you love safety. You get a PhD in child safety so you can put your child seat in the car. Why? Because we love safety. We have 401ks and we have 403bs. Why? Because we love safety. Because we love security. We have Nest cameras at the front door of our house, and Charlie can, Amy checks in on Charlie when she's in Haiti. Why? Because we love safety and we love security, and we have surrounded ourselves in a bubble of safety and security, and yet it's all a myth. And anything that challenges that creates an anxiety in us. For our kids, for adolescents, there are lots of issues that challenge their safety and their security, and it creates and provokes anxiety. If you talk to them about exams, and this future that rides on these tests and these scores, it challenges safety and security. For some of us, your finances challenge to break up, stressful jobs, to move from one house to another, a pregnancy, a hard relationship, to travel, to be sick, to parent, to ask a girl out. All of these things challenge my safety and security, and there's a possibility of fear and rejection. The reason I'm up at 5:55 this morning is not because it's my natural rhythm. It's because I'm fearful of rejection. I'm fearful of failure. And if you don't talk about a bad place to fail, it's right here. Because right now, every one of you are looking at me. So, Last night, I go to bed at 1 o'clock, and my alarm clock goes off in my head, actually 4:55 this morning, saying, hey, Nick, there's a chance of fear, there's a chance of failure, there's a chance of rejection. Get on it, get on it, get on it. Why? Because I could lose something. I could lose something. And so while this anxiety is built into us and it helps, when we focus on the anxiety, rather than a way to move through it, then what we become fearful of is not really the issue. What we become fearful of is the anxiety itself. And as we begin to dwell on that, then the anxiety begins to escalate and to mushroom, and it paralyzes us. That I can't do the things I would love to do. I can't engage the way I want to engage. I can't take this risk. I can't move in this direction because the anxiety paralyzes me and I've become fearful. And so what we do in response to that is we just shrink our circle of the things that we're willing to experience. That I get fearful when I'm in this situation, so we're just going to take that situation off the map, and now I don't have to feel anxious. When I engage my wife, when it's really difficult, I feel anxious, so I'm just going to take that off the table, and I'm going to step back because I don't like the way that makes me feel. If I go to this place and there's too many people, I'm just going to quit going to that place because I don't like the way it makes me feel. And we begin to take a world that God has given us and we begin to shrink it down and shrink it down and shrink it down. And I believe there's a spiritual battle here. Is that we serve a God that says, I need you to go. I need you to move. I need you to engage. I need you to be salt, and I need you to be light. And yet to live in an anxious culture, they would say, but got to shrink it because I don't know how to deal with it. I'm fearful of it, and the anxiety is overwhelming. And we take this circle, and we begin to shrink and shrink and shrink. And I'm fully confident that Satan says, great work. I have neutralized the children of God. They are so busy. I've neutralized them. Their hearts are so full of everything else, I've rendered them useless. So this morning, as we jump in, I want to ask you this question. What is it that you're missing out on that you wish you weren't? What is it that you're missing out on that you wish you weren't? Sometimes 9-year-olds have great wisdom. And sometimes I carry my life home more than I wish I did. And one day, Grace Ann, she said, you know, Dad, she said, you don't laugh very much anymore. She feels it. She feels the anxiety. She feels the world that's come down. Now here's my 9-year-old misses a dad that laughs. And you tell me we're not missing anything. Maybe it's a conversation. Maybe it's a level of intimacy for your spouse. Maybe it's seeking the heart of your children. Right? There's something on the line when we have anxiety. It doesn't come cost-free. And so my question for you is, what is it that you're missing that you really wish you had? And so this morning, for a few minutes, we're going to jump into 1 Peter chapter 5. A little bit of context of that is Peter now has grown up from this hothead follower of Jesus as a young guy, and he's now an older guy, and he's speaking into this church that's living in a really, really difficult time. And so 1 Peter is going to be this message of hope of how do we live in difficult situations. And so I hope this morning fairly is that we can take the wisdom Peter here offers the church there and pull that into our culture, into our lives, and hopefully make some sense. And so the first thing I want to share this morning is this idea, is I want you to lay down your rope. And so this morning, we'll try to explain visually what this looks like. Every fall, we go to a pumpkin patch, right? It's not pumpkin, it's pumpkin. Pumpkin patch. And I just love it. Like, it reminds me of all the goodness of America, right? To go buy mums and pumpkins and hay rides out to the pumpkin patch. I just love it. It's fall. They always have some really, really good food. And so one thing at this pumpkin patch that we visit is a tug of war. And so they have a rope that goes through the centerpiece. It's got a piece of tape. And so every year we go, the girls always say, "Hey, Dad, let's play tug of war." And so I'm going to get Grace Ann, if she'll come up here. Grace Ann's my youngest daughter. And so just hold that. And so at the pumpkin patch, we line up. And we get our rope sort of, hang on to it, hang it tight. So we get it right in the middle, and we say, 1, 2, 3, go. And I absolutely destroy her. I mean, I am telling you what. I mean, I walk around the pumpkin patch like, "What's up with that?" right? And she's over on the side crying, like, "Who wants some? Little kids," right? And so I love you in my whole heart. Now, so Mocha, you come on up. So I don't know if you guys know, this is Mocha Thomas, one of our young people, college age students. So you're just going to stand over here. Now, as we talk about this, now here's our thing. You see, in life, we've got some small stressors, right? We've got some things in life that really that we can beat, that we can overpower, right? We're strong enough and we're capable enough. Now, Mocha, you pick up your end. It's a different ball game, right? Now, if we were to do tug of war, Mocha would be running around the pumpkin patch going, "Look at me, I beat Nick," right? Now, here's the thing. In life, we have some of these. Cancer. It's big. Right? How do we wrestle that? Maybe there's divorce. Either it's imminent or you're living in it. That's big. I don't know that I can handle that one. How about really, really deep financial troubles? That's a struggle. I don't know if I can handle that one. But I got grocery shopping over here, right? I can handle this one, right? I'm trying to raise a couple kids. It's maybe a little bigger than this, but I got that one covered. Now, when I deal with this stress right here, here's my immediate response. Oh God, I didn't expect to find myself here, but here I am. Could you help? Could you give me wisdom? But the other challenge is this, is that when I have small obstacles, I'm very reluctant to ever ask for anything. Very reluctant. Why? Because I can handle this, but I can't handle this. But here's what I found. So I've talked to Olivia and Emma. If y'all will come up. Can y'all come on up? I don't mess with boys. I really just take 9-year-old girls. All right, so y'all pick up the rope. Now, what my experience has told me is that I can dominate one 9-year-old. If you throw a 13-year-old in the mix, it just got challenging. And then you put Mama on the other team, and Dad can't handle it, right? Now, I want you to see something. We're not actually going to pull, okay? 3 9-year-old girls is tough, right? There's some pull. There's some tension. Come to me, little girls. No, don't make a scene. Now, if I were to get a couple more, I couldn't take them. 5 or 6 9-year-old girls is way stronger than I am. 4 or 5 small stresses in your life, I'm just going to break the news to you. It's more than you can handle alone. You see, my wisdom, I know intellectually when I've got these things in my life, Like, I'm not even going to attempt to tackle this alone. Like, I'm not smart enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm not faithful enough. And so when these step in to life and I'm having to manage these, I'm going straight to God saying, God, could you help me? But in my foolishness and arrogance, I think I can manage 5 or 6 or 7 small things. And the truth is, I just can't. I just can't. And so the first thing is, we talk about anxiety, we talk about being overloaded. Is maybe we lay down the rope and say, God, I know I'm not strong enough for this, but God, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not even strong enough to be a great dad and to be a good husband and to manage my money and to be physically healthy and to pursue a relationship with you and to go to work and to be a minister and to care for people in my community. God, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. But we could. Let's not live in the foolishness of thinking that we can manage all of our life on our own and not live in the anxiety and the chaos. So I want us to be a people who live in a rhythm that when this happens, absolutely, let's hit our knees and beckon God to intervene and to step in and for us to surrender these things that we just can't manage, to surrender those to God and allow Him to move. But also in life, in my day-to-day rhythm, not to be so arrogant and prideful to think that I could manage this, because at the end of the day, I just can't. Thank you, young ladies. Give them a hand. And so in verse 6 of 2 Peter chapter 5, humble yourselves, humble yourselves, humble yourselves. Lay down your rope. Quit being so self-sufficient. Would you come before me, lay it down. In your difficulties, lay it down. In your challenges, lay it down. And I love this. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that He may lift you up in due time. Let's push this a little further. I want to be a man of God that 100% of my life is laid at the feet of God, under the mighty hand of God, and to have a heart that believes, not just says it, but the heart that believes that, God, I need you in 100% of what I do. That I realize who I am. Is that I really am a broken jar of clay. I realize that I am sinful. I realize that I am challenged. I realize that I am insufficient. I realize that I am incompetent in so many ways, and that God, 100% of my life, I am humbled before you under your mighty hand that you may walk with me. Because God, when I take things over, I generally mess them up. I generally mess them up. What if God has something more for us? Rather than just managing. Now maybe you've lived so long in the tension of navigating 6 or 7 9-year-olds at one time, and you're just spending your life just in the strain. And the lactic acid is building up, but you're just straining. What if we could release that and maybe live a life of freedom? Just maybe. You see, I need the mighty hand of God and my ministry. I need the mighty hand of God to be a dad. I need the mighty hand of God to honor my wife. I need the mighty hand of God to monitor my ethics. I need the mighty hand of God to monitor my attitude. I need the mighty hand of God to honor my discipline. I need the mighty hand of God to go to Kroger and to be salt and light to the lady that was working there way too early this morning. I need the mighty hand of God to engage the young man at the window this morning in McDonald's as he handed me my Diet Coke. I need the hand of God everywhere. There are no parts of my life that I want to go before God and say, God, I got it covered. Right? I'm good. She's 9 years old. I can handle it. And I think God would say, no, you can't. No, you can't. It's your wreck of a life that sent my son to the cross. Don't tell me you got it, because you don't. But I love you, and I want to be a part. I don't want you to be overloaded. I want you to be free. The second thing I want to share this morning is I don't want you to struggle alone. I believe one of the greatest tools that Satan has is to isolate us with our anxiety and with our fears and with our questions. And once they get isolated, then it becomes a breeding ground for these to mushroom larger and larger and larger, and really no one to really keep them in check and say, that's not reality. That's really not the truth. But as we shrink our circles, Satan says, go ahead and get it smaller and smaller and smaller. In verse 7, I just wonder, you're probably not going to find this in a book, but I just wonder, Peter says this, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Just this morning in class, we're talking in Luke chapter 5, and there was a story in Luke chapter 5 where Peter and his fisherman friends had been out fishing, and they had been fishing all night long, and Jesus shows up, and they push away from shore, and Jesus says, hey, Peter, I've got an idea. Cast your net on the other side. And they come up, and their boats begin to sink because there's so many fish. I just wonder, if when Peter tells this church, hey, cast your anxieties on him, I just wonder if he's speaking from experience, say, you know, one time there was a man who told me to cast my nets on the other side, and it was unbelievable. But how often we just continue to fish off the same side of the boat. And there's more stress, there's more busyness. We have all this technology to help us try to figure out, you know, let's get our calendars linked up. And man, if I wake up early and we can schedule and we can communicate and we can streamline and we can be efficient, like how much more stuff can we fit into a day? And I think Peter says, how about we not work quite so hard, but what if we tried something totally different? To take this anxiety that's overwhelming and to cast it as a cast net, to cast it upon God, to say, God, would you move into my life? But let me be honest. I've always been challenged because at times my faith is not what I wish it was. I've always been challenged by those that have the faith and the simple cliche of let go and let God. Let go and let God. It's like they skip away, right? And there's like some kind of music as they exit the room. Let go and let God. You know, they sort of dance off. And like my experience, like I wish it was that easy for me, but maybe it's that humility that gets in the way that I want to keep on control. Let's be honest. This morning, some of us right now don't have the belief and trust in God to give him anything. That sounds like a great idea there, preacher man, to take all of my stuff and just cast it up to God and we'll skip off into the field of daisies and everything's fine. Some of us this morning aren't really sure that God even cares. And if he did care, we're not entirely sure that he could do anything about it if he chose to. And that's fair. I'm not mad at you. Here's what I ask you to do. Find somebody that looks a lot like God and share it with them. If you can't trust God, find somebody that looks a lot like God and share it with them. Just don't go alone. Just don't go alone. Satan will wreck you in isolation. He will wreck you in isolation. And as I work with teenagers, here's the lies that Satan has told them. Nobody understands. Yes, we do. Nobody's experienced it before. Yes, we have. Nobody cares. Yes, we do. It's a lie from Satan that says you stay alone because nobody else gets what you're going through. And as an adolescent culture, their circles get smaller and smaller and smaller. But as adults, we're really just grown-up kids. Some of us have a very small circle that we could even be honest, that we could even be vulnerable about the things that are really wrecking our hearts, about the anxieties that we have about the past, about the present, about the future. Like, I can't tell. Like, I look like a weakling if I told somebody that I was fearful. Satan says, Nick, keep it to yourself, man. Right? You're going to have to check your man card if you go being vulnerable. If you go to actually share something that maybe I don't have it all together. Guys, I just want to encourage you, don't struggle alone. If you're overloaded, number one, God's really the only one that can reconcile and redeem it. But if your faith's not to a place that you can go there yet, just find somebody that looks a lot like him and begin a conversation. And maybe they can point you to him, because I can't redeem it, but I can point you to somebody who can. The third thing, we're moving quicker. This morning I want to say is this, wake up. Wake up. I wonder here in verse 8, Peter says this, be alert and sober. I'm going to guess Peter's having another flashback to the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus says, hey, Peter, stay awake. I'm going to go pray. And he comes back and he's sleeping. Hey, Peter, stay awake. I told you, stay awake. I've got to go pray. And Peter falls asleep every time. But yet here in 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter's saying, hey, guys, I missed it. I need you to stay awake. I need you to pay attention. On Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, this image is an image that for many of us will be locked into our mind. At 9:05, White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card whispered into George Bush's ear, a second plane has hit the second tower. America is under attack. It was true in 2001. And I believe in 2019, it is truer than ever. America is under attack. You are under attack. Your marriage is under attack. Your children are under attack. There is a spiritual battle being waged. And 1 Peter says, I need you to wake up. I need you to pay attention. Quit skipping through life as if you are safe and secure, because you're not. There is a battle being waged over your attention, over your imagination, over your soul, and over your heart. I need you to pay attention to what's going on around you. In verse 8, it says, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone who he may devour. Just a few weeks ago, I was helping Grace Ann with her science and studying science a little bit as a college student. I was always fascinated by adaptations that animals have to blend, right? So you have camouflage and you have mimicry and you have all these really cool things that allow predator-prey relationships to be challenged and nuanced. But I really feel like this whole prowling and the roaring part is like a really, really bad adaptation, right? So if we're in stealth mode and then the lion comes out, roar, right? Like, I see you. Right? I see, like, that was not sneaky at all. Now, I don't know if Peter, I don't know, sometimes I read too much into this, but here's the thing, is that we are under attack and we know it. And yet we don't pay attention enough at times to see what's lurking around the corner to complicate our lives even more. Like it's not a secret. I'm just going to tell you, if you plan 3 more activities this week for your family, you're going to be stressed. I'm just telling you. If you buy a bass boat and you can't afford it, you're going to be challenged financially. I'm just telling you. If you sleep 5 hours a night for several weeks, you can't keep up emotionally. I'm just telling you. Like, it is not rocket science. But this imagery of this roaring lion that in so many ways would say, yeah, come on, I see ya, we're friends. You see, some of us have the wounds to show of the lion attack. Some of us are carrying them. Some of us are challenged by this attack that we're in, and yet we struggle to make changes. Just a few weeks ago, there was a guy by the name of Travis Kaufman. Like, I like to be manly. Like, I love chainsaws and motor oil and power tools and diesel. Like, I love those kind of things. But this guy, this is crazy. This guy lives in Fort Collins, Colorado, had left that morning to go run 7 miles in the mountains, and his path got icy, so he took a different path. He got attacked by a mountain lion and killed it with his bare hands, right? How many of you guys heard this story and were so jealous that that was not you saying, bring on the mountain lion and I will choke it to death? He kills the mountain lion, runs back 7 miles down the hill, and goes to the hospital for a few stitches, right? Give it up for this guy. What? Like this, like, yeah, this is like the man's man. Let's check out this interview.
Yelling, and when I first turned around, the cat was probably 10 feet away from me, and it just kept approaching. And as it got close, it just kind of lunged at me. So I threw my arms up and it latched onto my wrist. So I was just kind of protecting my face. So yeah, it latched onto my wrist and then it just started clawing along my like face and then my legs. And I was just kind of screaming the whole time, doing my barbarian yell as best I could. And I tried to throw it off of me, and as I tried to throw it off me, like, we both left the trail because it just re-gripped onto my wrist and kind of tumbled off the slope to the south side of the trail. And from there, it was like just a wrestling match. It was thrashing, and then it still had my wrist locked in its jaws, and I was able to kind of get my left knee to pin down its back legs. And then I was able to pick up a big rock with my left hand, and I was trying to hit it on the head with a big rock, but it was kind of a tough angle because my wrist is still in its mouth and I'm not really getting a full swing, but I was able to kind of hit it in the back of the head a few times, and I just knew that it wasn't gonna be super effective. So then I used just a little body weight transition and got my right leg close to my wrist and was able to finally get it onto the cat's neck. And then I stepped on its neck and then eventually was able to suffocate it. And then it finally released from my wrist.
That story is captivating. But let me tell you this as we close this morning. It's really bad wisdom and how to fight our battles. It's really bad wisdom. So right now, some of us are in a cat fight for our life. We're in a cat fight for our life. We are wounded, and we are bleeding, and we're not sure we're going to make it. And I think the story of the gospel is this. You can't kill the lion. Love the story. That's not reality. Lions kill people. And so God would remind me that, Nick, you are not man enough. I know you'd love to be Travis Kaufman and have that on your resume, the lion killer, but Nick, you are not that, and I know you're not that. So I put my son into your world to save you from what you can't save yourself from. You see, I saw you, Nick. I saw you battling the spiritual battle. And I knew you because I made you, and I know your weakness, and I know your frailty, and I know your brokenness, and I watched you fight. I saw the struggle, but I knew you had no chance. And so because of my unbelievable love for you, I sent my son Jesus to earth to be with you, to be amongst you. And in a few weeks, we're going to celebrate an empty tomb. And Nick, the tomb is empty because I want you to know that I have the power to kill the lion. You don't. And so this morning, for those of us that are in a spiritual battle, I want you to know, as manly as it would be, keep hanging on, right? Keep pulling. You're going to get wore out and you will lose. If you're in a fight with a lion and you're bleeding and you know the pain that it's costing you right now, I'm telling you, you're not in a position to choke out the lion. But Jesus says, Peter says, because you can't kill the lion, would you humble yourself? Would you let go of your rope? Would you quit being so proud and so arrogant and so self-sufficient and put yourself under the authority of the mighty hand of God? And in due time, he will reach down into the struggle and he will pull you out. He will rescue you in due time. There's this incredible life that God invites us into. And it's a battle. It's a battle. There's a battle being waged over your soul. And so I just ask us, I ask myself, on the nights at 3 a.m. that my heart is anxious and I'm overloaded, Nick, quit being so proud. Quit being so self-sufficient. Would you invite God into your struggle? Would you cast it on him? Would you cast it on somebody else that looks like him? Would you humble yourself? Would you let go of your rope? And then maybe, just maybe, maybe then you could be useful. Church, I love you. In dealing with teenagers and dealing with families, we are in an overload crisis. We are in an overload crisis. And we're not doing so well. And as adults, right, we get it too. There's a life Jesus invites us over to, and it's not overloaded. It's not anxiety. It's not stressed. It's not overscheduled. It's not drowning. It's not fighting the struggle with nine-year-olds. That's not the struggle. Would you invite him in? He asked you. Let's stand and sing.
You unravel me with a melody. You surround me with a song of deliverance from my enemies till all my fears are gone. Now I'm no longer a slave to fear, for I am a child of God. Now I'm no longer a slave to fear, for I am a child of God. From my mother's womb, you have chosen me. Love has called my name. I've been born again into a family. Your blood flows through my veins. Now I'm no longer a slave to fear, for I am a child of God. Now I'm no longer a slave to fear, for I am a child of God. You split the sea so I could walk right through it. My fears are drowned in perfect love. You rescue me and I will stand and sing. I am a child of God. You split the sea so I could walk right through it. My fears are drowned in perfect love. You rescue me and I will stand and sing. I am a child of God. I am a child of God. I am a child of God. So, Father, let us cast all of our burdens on you. Let us give everything over to you. We know that you care for us. We know that Your power is stronger than anything we can face. Help us to be faithful, to stay close to you, even as we leave this place. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.